9, Joe 69 to join the conversation.
Okay. This is another new one I brought up with me about something that might be dear to the hearts of people living in the shadow of Redmond. And a man who really thinks he needs 73 million.
Hello and welcome. It is now time for SDFO to VOIP. Please dial 929-299-1269 to join the conversation.
Welcome to the SDF conferencing system. You are the only party in this conference.
O2VOIP 929-299-1269. VOIP 929-299-1269.
One other party is in this conference.
VOIP 929-299-1269. OPVOIP 929-299-1269.
One other party is in this conference.
Yes, I'm booking back. I'm booking back. the undertow kind of thing.
OPVOIP929-1269.
2 other parties in this conference.
This is Publius.
Hello, Publius. Can you hear me?
I can almost make out what you're saying.
I'm sorry. I'll try.
So yes, this Chinese opera record that I have here. The thing is, I mean, obviously it's all in Chinese, so I'm not really certain which part of the jacket. I mean, I can infer that the long string of characters may be the title, and then there are two shorter strings of three characters apiece, which look as though they might be names of performers, except that one of them... Well, they may be performer names, but they're certainly not human names. They're certainly not human names because one of them, it's a string of three characters. The characters are woman, male phoenix, and female phoenix. Or the other way around. So it's Niu Huang Feng or Niu or Feng Huang Niu. Anyway. Unfortunately, my workflow is very slow here because I'm looking up the character in Dr. Uyghur's dictionary in an attempt to make sure that I know what the pronunciation and the stroke count are and the radical, and then looking the character up in the Unicode radical stroke index in order to get the actual Unicode point, which takes about a minute or two per character. Very annoying.
It's not so annoying if you learn it.
But yes, it's quite tiring. And, you know, yes, I'm using an old dictionary. This dictionary is from the 1920s. But what else am I supposed to do? I mean, I do not have a modern, traditional Chinese dictionary. I suppose there must be modern, traditional Chinese character dictionaries from Taiwan.
From Taiwan or from China, you can go to CDIC.
I really am not sure what you're saying because it sounds as though you're talking through a fan. That I get about... It's like the sample rate is completely wrong or something, so I hear your syllables interrupted with gaps, and I'm hearing myself the same way, which must be echoed back to me from your end. It's very strange. But yeah, it's a... This book is really great, actually. Chinese characters, their origin, etymology, history, classification, and signification. But it was translated into English from French in the 1920s and written, you know, years before that, which is actually not, doesn't make it difficult. Doesn't make it difficult to use, it's just that Unicode Radical Stroke Index is laid out in some really weird way. I'm really thinking about going through this and also the Rose Innes Japanese Dictionary and simply writing in the Unicode points by hand next to each character. You know, as I look them up, obviously, not as a whole thing. Because these are great reference books, and they're much easier to use than any computerized reference that I can find. But they don't contain the specific piece of information. The only dictionary I have that has Unicode points in it is the Kodansha Kanji Learner's Dictionary, which probably has most of these characters in it, but of course doesn't give me anything referring to the Chinese pronunciation. Which, you know, I suppose is important here. Now, it's actually a really good dictionary. Although, again, of course, you have to deal with the Wade-Giles Romanization, which is as funky in its way as the Pinyin Romanization in its. That anyone would be named Feng Huang Nu.
Yeah, I think that's
And of course I'm butchering the pronunciation because I have no skill in Chinese pronunciation whatsoever. One reason why I started by learning Japanese because pronunciation of Japanese is a bubble to anyone who's done classical Latin. Oh, I know Lin Yutang. Very important modern Chinese writer, if by modern
Hello,
you mean modern goodies.
It is now time for SDFO2VOIP. Please dial 929-1269 to join the conversation.
Beijing in the
1930s.
Also, I saw in Germany, in the Museum of Communications there, a Chinese typewriter of a kind, which was the kind where you have a block where, which has, you know, like a matrix of characters in them, and you position your piece, you position either the block or the piece of paper, one or the other, and you sort of hit it with a hammer. Anyway, looks very laborious to you.
No. He is a real typewriter.
Crap on a cracker. What is that? But what's really insane, of course, is a Chinese linotype machine. I mean, even a Roman character linotype machine is pretty crazy. But a Chinese linotype machine. that's 11 strokes, then the one I'm looking for is 10. But I'll look under reticle 89. No, definitely not reticle. Among my many and varied language books is one of the awful titles of Trindex, which collates multiple different methods of indexing the Chinese characters, including the four-corner system, which
are sometimes... VOIP 929-299-1269.
New Halpern Japanese English Dictionary introduced what's known as the skip method, which is pretty fast and convenient. Although sometimes there's kind of an arbitrary choice.
Good.
anyway, in order to play you any of this Chinese opera, I will first have to record it on my computer. I have a method of doing that. Put it on the turntable and I can dub it over. I don't think I can do it live on the mic. Well, scratch that. I'm sure I can. I just don't know what I should use to do it with, because MPC will work with pre-recorded files, but... Oh, hell, I could try it. Hold on.
Hold on.
This is going to be awful. Hold on. I want you to know that I'm using an actual telephone to do this. But this is Tianxing Record, TSLP 2111.
VOIP 929-299-1269.
Well, that was a sample of it.
Hey, Skip.
I don't know how well that came through, but my plan, I can use the turntable and the computer to actually transcribe it in a reasonable way that will sound like, you know, music, rather than... I'm not sure what it sounds like over the telephone, but telephony is not really made for music. Even if there was a service you could get in Barcelona circa 1898 where they would telephone the opera to your home. Let's see. The other Chinese record is entitled The Joyful Music. I've also got a 78 which is cracked, and I need to... transcribe it. You can transcribe cracked 78s because the needle is much larger in diameter, and so you can do that, but you've got to be careful, obviously. But let's see, that other Chinese record, which is entitled The Joyful Music, I mean, it's Hong Kong, I guess, and it's got an English language title, and the Chinese title, and the English language title is The Joyful Music. Like I say, it sounds like surf rock mixed with traditional Chinese music, and it's quite mind-bending. Now, Li Ming record LM2123, which is on, I want to be clear here, red vinyl, to make it especially auspicious, I suppose. Red vinyl, which, of course, because it doesn't have carbon black as a filler, is transparent, mostly. Stereo separation on this one is real strong. You've got the Chinese instruments coming from one channel and the Western instruments coming from the other channel.
Hello and welcome. It is now time for SDFO to VOIP. Please dial 929-299-1269 to join the conversation.
So yeah, Lee Ming Records, bright red vinyl. Lee Ming
O-T-V-O-I-P
Records. I believe it was issued both in Hong Kong and in Taiwan. But I will, I will digitize this. I'll probably play it over open mic this evening. I can probably do that as a rough cut, you understand, just a rough cut, one file per side, and then it'll take me a bit longer to work it up into a proper album, but I do that. That's a thing that I do. It's like that record by the King of Thailand that I have. And incidentally, anybody who wants a copy of the record, Falling Rain, Songs by His Majesty the King of Thailand, please send me an email. But I don't know if it's commonly known anymore, but Rama the Ninth, the late King of Thailand, was a well-known jazz musician. Anyway, he used to have a radio show. And, I mean, it's not just because he was the king. There was one of the well-known, I don't know, Cannonball Adderley or somebody, one of the well-known jazz musicians said, "Oh, man, if that guy didn't have a regular gig, I could get him work any night of the week." You know, talk about just imagining the King of Thailand and the New York jazz clubs. He was born in Switzerland, but his parents met in America. They both went to Harvard, if I recall correctly. Anyway, I came across this record in Half Price Books years ago. This is where my weird stuff mostly comes from, Half Price Bookstore, and I copied it over to CD and made some copies, and Dad's Thai co-workers were just agog to listen to it, but it was as a result of that I wrote a check to the Royal Thai Ambassador to the United States. So I, in some way or form or fashion, I actually paid royalties to royalty. How do you like that? Most people never get to do that in their lives. Anyway, like I say, I will hang up the phone now and go over to the other computer, which is connected to my whole sound system, connected both ways by digital connections, because that's the kind of person that I am, and I will get to dubbing those off. And if I've got time enough tonight, I will also dub off that bizarre record from Egypt, okay? It is the audio of the light and sound show that they do at the Karnak temples. And so
yeah,
all this bizarre crap in it, because it's people saying things like, "That the earth may be fertile and the blood strong." Really, half of it sounds like it belongs in the Doctor Who radio play.
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a Penmic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
They also do the show in French, and for all I know, they also do it in Arabic. But this is the English record, fortunately. I wouldn't be able to make heads or tails of an Arabic record, and the French one wouldn't be much good to me either. I found a YouTube video of somebody who had the audio from the show, but it was the French version. So that wasn't very useful. But yeah, so I buy weird records. I mean, really weird records.
How do you find them?
But mostly what I do is I go to Half Price Books, because there's a chain in the U.S. of stores called Half Price Books. But the main one, the original one, the one that started it all, is in Dallas, Texas, at the intersection of Northwest Highway and 75 Central Expressway. And you go in there, and you just sort of look through the bins. But I go to various locations at various times, mostly looking for Japanese animation on Laserdisc, because that is my, you know, that is my crack. But I also look for other stuff. And I go over to the world bins, and I look through them, and it's like, oh, what's that? It's a record of songs by the King of Thailand. I've heard of him. Or, you know, what is this? I don't know. It's in Chinese. I can't read Chinese. Well, at least it's also got English on it. Okay. Or the Chinese opera record, however, I was in Sacramento, California. I was trying to go to the Railway Museum. And in Old Town Sacramento, there's a bunch, which is sort of a historical preservation district. There's a bunch of little shops, and one of them is a record store. And I went in there, and I said, you got anything really weird? Particularly, it was, you know, it was downstairs in some kind of, like, a go-down. Anyway, I went in there, and I said, anything, like, Asian and old? And he starts shuffling through things. And he comes up with this Chinese opera record, and also this cracked 78. Anyway. Now, one that I'm really upset about is one I did to myself. I found this record. It's like a flexi disc. It's so thin. And it's Japanese music from just after the Second World War. So it's like Japanese, like, folk songs reset to be like small band late 40s jazz numbers. And unfortunately, it wouldn't play. I mean, it would not play, and part of that was because it was badly warped. And I have a technique for taking the warp out of records, and I applied it to this record, and unfortunately, the grooves are so shallow in this record that now it doesn't play, but in a completely different fashion, which is annoying. One of these days, what I've got to do is I've got to put it on a flatbed scanner, because there's somebody has written an algorithm for decoding the audio, obviously only mono, because in a Berliner type disc record, the amplitude is carried by the wiggle in the grooves, and if it's a stereo record, the stereo different signal is carried by the vertical signal. So you can only get the amplitude signal, the mono signal, out of it, but you can get it with a flatbed scanner, and that's what I'm going to have to do, because I've never found any mention of this record anywhere else, and I think the grooves are still capable of being made out by a scanner. But there's one that it's like, it's rendered in katakana, but you say, oh, that's Jerry Cosby. And I don't know who the hell that is, but he's singing, like, Nagasaki Rhapsody or something. You know, there's, like, Japanese coal miner songs and a bunch of weird crap like this. I mean, you know, as much of a weird crap as you can get on a 7-inch 33. But I've got all kinds of, I mean, like I say, weird records are really my bag. And these Chinese records that I have, they're probably not weird in any objective sense, right? There's probably 100 million people who wouldn't find them weird at all. But, you know, from a Western perspective, they're definitely unusual. And considering, I suppose, how few Chinese folks would have had a phonograph in the 1950s, I suppose they are maybe kind of weird even from the Chinese perspective. I don't know. I mean, it's the sort of thing, you know, are these the records you would have heard in the international settlement in Shanghai?
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a Penn Mic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
What I do know is that from looking at old documents, that the very first Edison recording catalog had quite a few entries in Chinese. And that kind of surprised me. I don't know if they were made for the Chinese market, if there was one. I don't know if they were made for Chinese Americans. But in the very earliest record catalogs that Edison put out, I mean, back in the cylinder days, there were quite a few Chinese titles. Now, you can imagine the typesetting that must have required.
Mimeograph.
And, you know, I'm trying very hard not to imagine the shiny, you know, an amban somewhere up country, and the, you know, the magistrate has put the phonograph out, and the magistrate, and, you know, and the, you know, they're all in the, you know, all in the yamen, and they're, you know, dancing and whipping their cues from side to side, and, you know, wearing the little button hats and the robe. It's like getting down to the groove. I'm trying very hard not to imagine that, but it's so compelling. But, of course, I'm also reminded of Sand-Buried Ruins of Koh Tan, which is the book by Sir Mark Aurel Stein, who was superintendent of public education in Kashmir, but his actual his vocation was archaeologist. And in 1900, he took some time off, and he crossed into Chinese Turkestan, Xinjiang, and did archaeological explorations there. And, of course, he had to sit down and meet with the ambans, you know, for the Chinese magistrates everywhere he went, you know, and describing how he was entertaining the magistrate on a return visit. And the thing was, he had a tablecloth, but it was white. And, of course, he would never spread the table with a white tablecloth.
No.
And so he's casting around. He's packing his brains. And the his Indian assistant points out to him that he's got this plaid saddle blanket, which is, of course, it's got a red ground and blue stripes and that kind of thing on it. And so he spreads the table with the saddle blanket. And the Chinese magistrate loves the saddle blanket. And so on his return, he actually made the fellow a gift of it, I think. Anyway, and the remarkable thing is that this is, he was in Chinese territory, I mean, not China proper, but Chinese territory, Chinese-governed territory, during the time that the Boxer Rebellion was happening, and neither he nor the Chinese government there knew anything about it, because it would have taken weeks for messages to get from China out to the Mars and Turkestan, right, and it would have taken weeks for messages to get from India across the mountains into Turkestan. And so the result is, theoretically, there are hostilities going on between the country that he's from and the country that the Chinese magistrate is from, and neither of them actually know about it at the time. You know, it's like, oh, wow, that's probably the best way that could have turned out, honestly. You know, you could imagine if they had been required to, you know, set up a little table with, play checkers or something to simulate a warfare between the two sides.
Right.
Attention on radio listeners. Coming up at 0300 hours UTC is a Penmic with open mic. Anyone can stream.
All kinds of things happening, of course, now in the territory which the old Chinese empires had some vague rule over but didn't really try to govern as such. But yeah, Sand-Buried Ruins of Koh Tan by Sir Mark R.L. Stein is a wonderful book. He had several others. One was called, I think, On Alexander's Track to the Oxus. Anyway, but wonderful book. He was Hungarian originally, I think, anyway. But wonderful books. I found them in the library in Fort Worth, and I don't think they have them in the library in Fort Worth anymore. And it makes me so mad when libraries discard old books, because you're not going to find them anywhere else. And I've seen reprints of Stein's books going for like hundreds of dollars. But he was the guy who discovered the cave with all the Buddha statues and paintings out in the Arsind of Turkestan. But his thesis was, and this was a brilliant idea for an archaeological expedition. It was a brilliant concept. He said, when I look at it, it seems that the rivers in Central Asia, the Central Asia is a single great basin, seems that the rivers are all fed by the glaciers, and they just flow down into the central, well, not quite the center of the basin, Lop Nor, actually, basically, which is a sort of salt marsh on the northern extremity, but, and of course it's been used for testing hydrogen bombs since then, but who cares? The rivers all flow down into the center of the basin and dry up. And he says, the glaciers that feed them have been getting smaller since the end of the last ice age. So every year, the river flow stops a little shorter. And so he said, what I want to do is go out into the desert, past the current end of the river, follow the water course.
There are three other parties in this conference.
Hello, this is Jazz Mass.
Hello, Jazz Mass. The other person, whom you may be able to make out, but I really can't, is Shupe.
Yeah, I can hear her voice.
But anyway, so yeah, Stein went out into the desert following the old water courses as far as he could, of course, because in those days, with no motor transport, he had to be constantly sending camels back up to where there was water to bring him water, and then excavated it and found all kinds of things. He found Chinese outposts. He found, which were identifiable by the strips of bamboo with Chinese writing on them, obviously. He found all kinds of things, various remnants of various peoples. And one of the most interesting things for me was he was looking at the original, the ancient Great Wall, which in this area was basically a low rammed earth rampart, waist high. But he traced the routes of the Silk Road caravans through part of the area where he was. He found an area where he was able to tell you exactly what the route of the caravan was, because there was doop, 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 doop. Every 100 feet or so, there was a cash coin, an old, probably Wushu, I don't recall exactly, but a cash coin. And he says, it's obvious what happened here. It's obvious that one of the merchants, the bag he was carrying his cash in, got a hole worn in it. And every couple of minutes, a coin would drop out. And he didn't notice it for several hours.
That's unfortunate.
No, because they used the string. They put string on the coin.
Yeah, there's. It is odd because the cash are normally strung on strings. But in fact, there's. The standard unit of 1,000, the quan. It's a string of 1,000 cash. So I'm not entirely sure why they were carrying them in sacks at the time of the former Han Dynasty, but it's clear, either that or, he was carrying on a string and the string became unknotted and dropped them off at intervals, but one way or the other, it seems unlikely that the guy was just sitting on the back of a camel.